Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor. What up, Chris?
Ethan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Just another day, another dollar, Chris. How you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. It was a great day outside with my son for a lot of the day. Was at practice earlier today for the Cavs. That was not very eventful at all, but I was there. JB spoke to us, George Niang spoke to us, and Darius Garland spoke to us. So that was part of my day, and the rest of my day was being outside, hanging out with my son, my wife, and a bunch of the neighbors. It was fun.
Sounds like a great day. But Chris, I want to get into the discussions that happened and the players that were not involved in practice today. I think that's one of the more key points of today's podcast, especially with how the team has dealt with injuries this entire season. And Chris, we learned another player has been added to the injury list for the Cavs, and Sam Merrill, someone who has been integral off the bench in different aspects of the game for the Cavs, especially when they've been dealing with injuries, and they upgraded it from whiplash to a neck strain. So Chris, can you give us more information on what you heard at practice from JB Bickerstaff on that situation?
Well, I don't think they're ever going to list it as whiplash. That would be very, very weird on an NBA injury report, but it's clearly something with his neck. JB Bickerstaff described it as whiplash-like, very similar to that. It happened in the first half against the Los Angeles Clippers. Paul George got a rebound. He went out in transition. Sam Merrill was backpedaling. He tried to take a charge. He tries to take charges all the time. This time he got run over by Paul George. He was called for a blocking foul. It looked like Sam was going to collide into the knee or the leg of George Niang, but he avoided that slightly. It still looked like his head whipped back, his neck whipped back as soon as he hit the floor. And he came back in. First of all, he played a few more minutes after that, and then he came back in for like 10 to 15 seconds or something like that in the second quarter, and then he got taken out of the game and he was back in the locker room, and I think out of an abundance of caution and just making sure that he was okay, he did not play the rest of the game. He did not play in the second half. I'm not sure he would have played anyway, because JB has shown that he doesn't like the Clippers as a matchup for somebody like Sam Merrill. He only played 7 minutes in the first meeting between the two. And, you know, Ty Lue and the Clippers coaching staff did a really good job of basically playing Sam off the court and playing him to an ineffective level. Nonetheless, it was an injury that the Cavs were a little bit concerned about when leaving the road trip. He had more scans. He had further evaluation today. That's part of the reason why he didn't practice, because he was going through that evaluation process, and they determined that it is a neck strain and he is doubtful for tomorrow's game. And, you know, anytime a guy does not practice and it's practice that they're having before this homestand, that's obviously not the best sign. I don't want to be alarmist or anything along those lines, but him already being listed as doubtful for tomorrow's game against Memphis certainly puts a question into whether he's going to be available at all on this current homestand.
Yeah, Christian, I mean, we've seen how impactful Sam can be on the offensive end as a shooter, the gravity he can bring, and especially going into a playoff series where we noticed that the Cavs last year needed more shooting. This year, they're not going to have that if Sam is not able to go. So, obviously, they do have Max Strus and George Niang and those guys that they went and got this offseason. But Sam Merrill also adds depth to that. And we knew that it was going to be hard for him to get minutes and things like that in the playoffs. But just having him available is something that the Cavs wanted to have going into the playoff series.
Well, it also helps right now that Isaac Okoro made his return from the toe issue. And he didn't have any kind of setback following the game against the Clippers. And he was out there on the practice floor today, and he was still out there taking shots after practice. He was one of the last players on the court getting in extra work. So that tells me that he's not dealing with the same kind of thing with his toe. He didn't have any kind of issues coming off of the Clippers game. He's probably going to have his minute restrictions start to get lifted more and more and more as he gets more and more comfortable, as he gets further removed from that injury. So having Isaac, somebody who can play the two or the three, that certainly helps from a depth perspective. Having Karis, who can play the two and the three, that helps from a depth perspective. But you're right, when it comes to Sam, like, there's just a different dimension that he brings offensively. There's a different element that he brings offensively. He brings a different kind of look and a different kind of ceiling to this offense, especially when JB was starting to dabble Ethan with a little bit of Max Strus, Sam Merrill together, to see what kind of chaos that could create for the opponent. And I think that was something that JB was probably going to use at various points going into the playoffs. I would think by the time the playoffs roll around, there's so much time before then that Sam will be okay and he'll be cleared from this. And the sense that I get is it's nothing that the team is overly concerned about, but we do know that, especially this late in the season, the Cavs are going to be cautious with any kind of injury.
100%. And speaking of being cautious with other injuries, Dean Wade was also not at practice today and has been someone who's been out since trying to come back at practice before the Houston Rockets game nearly a month ago. And this is something that they've seen to be upgraded from knee soreness now to a knee sprain. And there's been thoughts about him not being able to return before the end of the regular season and if he'll be able to be ready for the playoffs. Dean Wade is somebody that adds a lot, especially on the defensive end, at least for the Cavs, and also brings a scoring aspect as a bigger shooter that allows them to space the floor and continue to grow on their three-point shooting. But with him being out, we've seen a different look for the Cavs. We've seen their defense struggle in certain aspects, especially when you see guys like George Niang have to step up and guard players that would regularly be guarded by Dean Wade. Chris, I know we've talked about this a couple times on the podcast lately, but has there been any update on Dean? Because I feel like we're still in the dark about what's going on with him.
No, there's not really any kind of update. You know, if you look in past issues with knee sprains from various players throughout the course of NBA history, at least recent NBA history, Ethan, it can range from 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the grade of it. It could be 6 to 8 weeks, or it could be like 3 to 5 weeks. And we're obviously about 3.5 weeks into this thing. And I think part of the reason for the latter portion of that possible timeline is because the Cavs were still trying to figure it out, and Dean was still trying to figure out exactly what was wrong with his knee at first. And they were trying to figure out the cause of it, and they were trying to figure out the best possible treatment plan. And once they figured that out, and he started to make minor progress in terms of his recovery, that was a positive sign. But they didn't figure it out right away, and it took probably about like a week before they really understood, okay, this is the root of the injury, this is what's causing it, this is the best possible treatment plan moving forward. So the sense that I get from people around the organization and people close to Dean, it's the same, that there is a strong likelihood that he is going to miss the remainder of the regular season, and all they can do at this point is hope. And that's the word that continues to be used by everybody when it comes to this situation. There is hope that he is going to be available and ready for the playoffs. But as we talked about in the previous podcast, Ethan, you have to wonder, okay, what kind of state is he going to be in physically and mentally when the playoffs roll around? And is he going to be in a situation where he can play the amount of minutes that maybe he potentially would, given the kind of matchup and given the situation and given the game flow and things along those lines. Because, you know, he's obviously pretty important to this team regardless. And then there are legitimate questions about George Niang and how much he can play in a 7-game series. And I think there are legitimate questions, too, when it comes to the Cavs, about how much can they play Jared Allen and Evan Mobley together in a playoff series. So with the thinking that a majority of the minutes for Evan Mobley, not all of them, but a majority of the minutes for Evan Mobley would probably be staggered with Jared Allen, and they would probably be back up 5 minutes, you know, that creates an opportunity at power forward. And if George Niang is not effective, if he's getting picked on the defensive end of the floor, if the Cavs can't do the things defensively from a switching standpoint that they would want to do, then what else do they do at the power forward spot if Dean is not in a place where he can be healthy and effective, where he can be as confident as he was at various points throughout the course of this season? I keep going back to the Boston game. Like, that was peak Dean Wade. His confidence was sky high. He was strutting. He was making an impact on both ends of the floor. And that kind of showed an ability against that kind of team, against that caliber team, that maybe Dean would be ready, more ready, for a playoff series this year than he was last year. But now you throw this curveball into it with his knee, how healthy it is, if he's going to have the same amount of confidence coming back from that injury. It's something that the Cavs are going to have to continue to work through, and it's not an ideal situation. I guess it does help, Ethan, that Marcus Morris Sr. is on the bench, and he is another option that JB can go to fill some minutes at the 3/4 spot. But it's obviously not a great situation when you don't have a lot of clarity when it comes to an injury.
Yeah, Chris, and now injuries are starting to pile up around the league. We've seen a lot of different players get injured, and most recently, Giannis Antetokounmpo just went down in their recent game with a calf strain, and he's going to have MRIs, and it looked like it could have affected his Achilles, his calf. There's a lot of different variables when it comes to that part of the body. And I think we have to go back to what we said in the last podcast about the effectiveness of a star player, of a superstar, of a all-star caliber player, of an MVP candidate being taken away from a team that has needed him, that has leaned on him a lot. And we've talked about that with Donovan Mitchell. But for a Milwaukee Bucks team that was going downhill against teams that they should have beaten in the last 5 games, they won their first game in the last 5 games tonight against the Celtics, even when Giannis went down. And without Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't know how the Bucks are going to be a true threat against teams that are in the Eastern Conference, depending on the severity of his injury. I mean, Damian Lillard is a star on his own, but you have seen him struggle this season. You've seen teams be able to take away his ability to shoot the basketball and having struggles to get into the paint as well. And Chris Middleton, who has been someone that they have taken away the spotlight from as much with Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo, it'll be interesting to see what they are able to do to bring him back to the usage rate that he had as of last season. Because it's a completely different team when you don't have Giannis on the floor, as it is for the Cavs when they don't have Donovan Mitchell on the floor. And I think that's something that's going to shake up not only the Eastern Conference, but the first round of the playoffs. Because obviously we understand Boston has already solidified their number one seed. They've solidified the best record in the NBA. And the Bucks have already solidified their playoff berth as well. So with all that being said, it'll be a toss-up to see who gets to play the Bucks, what the severity of Milwaukee and Giannis's situation is with his injury, and then we'll have to all figure out what's going to go down depending on how they can change their schemes with Giannis potentially being out for long term. And I mean, they went from a championship or bust team this season to, depending on if Giannis is out, whether or not they're going to get out of the first round of the playoffs again.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All that to say, we're going to talk a little bit about the things that the Cavs need to do to improve and to take advantage of situations that are going to be put in front of them. And especially with Donovan Mitchell being back on the court and participating in practice today, it is important and pivotal for the Cavs to make multiple changes or improvements to make sure that they get past the first round, which has been their goal all season. So, Chris, I want to start with this one first because I think it is the biggest one to me. I think it's the defense. This is a team that is known to be a defense-first team. They have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen in the starting lineup for that reason alone. Over the last 15 games, they ranked 27th in the NBA in defensive rating and have allowed the opponents to score 100 or more points in 14 of those last 15 contests. That's not Cavalier defense. That's not Cavs basketball to begin with. And obviously, we understand that Isaac Okoro has been out for those stretches. Dean Wade has been out for those stretches, for parts of those stretches. And knowing all of that, I still think that there has been a need for them to lock back in defensively to create offense, because that's how we know this Cavs team to be. They use the defense to create turnovers, to create blocks, and then they get out in transition using the fast-paced offense that we talked about yesterday about JB Bickerstaff wanting them to continue to run and get up the floor and use pace to take advantage of defenses not getting set up. And knowing all of that, the defense leading to offense has been something that we have looked for the Cavs, especially because we know that they've struggled in half-court sets, and especially with letting the shot clock get too far down and things of that nature. But this team being a defense-first team and being 27th in the NBA, the third worst in the NBA in defensive rating over the last 15 games, which is close to the All-Star break, but not all the way back to the All-Star break, that's inexcusable. Because you have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley who are supposed to be stoppers. You have Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell who are supposed to be able to be the front line of defense. And then you have Isaac Okoro who's coming back. It feels like they've lost that aspect of their identity. And until they get that back, I don't think their offense is going to uptick as much as they need it to as well.
Part of the catalyst for that defensively, when you're talking about deflections, when you're talking about steals, and you're talking about turning defense into offense, part of the catalyst for that was Donovan Mitchell. The way that Donovan was playing on the defensive end of the floor was better than at any other point in his entire career, and he was one of the league leaders in steals. And it allowed them to get out in transition. It allowed him to get out in transition, too. So with a limited Donovan Mitchell, your point of attack defense is obviously going to suffer. He doesn't have the same change of direction. He doesn't have the same lateral movement. He doesn't have the same explosiveness. We've talked all about the impact that that has on his own offense and the Cavs' offense as well, but it's having an impact on his ability to consistently defend, his ability to disrupt the passing lanes, his ability to get steals and deflections. That's part of it. The other part of it is they've played some pretty good offenses during that stretch. But I do think you're right in terms of the benefit of playing Jared and Evan together was always supposed to be what that means for the Cavs as a whole defensively. Not necessarily what it means for Jared or Evan individually, but what that means for the Cavs as a whole defensively. because not a lot of people in the NBA have two elite rim protectors, two all-defensive players anchoring their paint. And you just haven't seen, from a Cavs perspective, you haven't seen enough rewards of those two guys together defensively to continue to justify playing those guys over and over and over and over again together, because we understand the limitations offensively. But the thinking was always, yeah, we're losing a little bit offensively. We're losing some scoring. We're losing some firepower. We're losing some spacing and some shooting. But the benefit of that is how good we are defensively. If they're not going to be that level of great defensively with those two guys on the floor together, I think it should be easier for JB to use more four-shooter lineups and split those guys up and see if they can get a little bit of a boost offensively.
Yeah, Chris, and I think the next part of what we need to discuss about this team is, simply put, the ability for Darius Garland to be further successful in crunch time, especially with Donovan Mitchell not being fully healthy, Donovan Mitchell not being able to get the lift into the paint as much as the Cavs know him able to do, or to his liking, frankly. Darius Garland needs to step up in that aspect, because the Cavs cannot turn to Evan Mobley or Jared Allen to create offense off the dribble to do that, and more than likely, they're not going with four-shooter lineups. They're both going to be in the game at the same time. So let's think, if they are using a four-shooter lineup, you got Max Strus, potentially Caris LeVert, and then Isaac Okoro as well. Outside of Caris LeVert, there's few that are used to creating off the bounce and creating for themselves. Max Strus is more of a catch-and-shoot guy, and Caris LeVert has been able to create for himself, has been able to do those things. But the team isn't turning to Caris LeVert with Donovan Mitchell on the floor as well. They're looking for Darius Garland. And these are a lot of guards that we're talking about. Shooting guards, point guards, and even small forwards. Because you think about what Donovan Mitchell brings to the court. You think about what Caris LeVert, Max Strus, Isaac Okoro. All of those guys have their specific roles. And they've been able to be successful in those roles.
Here's the thing. If Donovan is out there, even if he's just playing decoy, that matters in this conversation, okay? Because if we look at some of the times where Darius has had to be the guy in the fourth quarter, the situation has been a little bit different, right? For the most part, it's been while Donovan is on the bench. But if he's on the court with him, okay, eyes are going to go to Donovan. The best defender on the opposing team is going to be occupied by Donovan, right? And defenses may be, even in a limited capacity, even if Donovan's not 100% healthy, he is still a threat every time he takes the floor. There's still an understanding of what's required defensively to try and slow him down, right? So every team is going to say, one, we're going to use our best defender against Donovan in those situations, or two, we're going to send multiple defenders at him to take the ball out of his hands. Now, if it's the first scenario, then Darius doesn't have to try and initiate offense against the best opposing defender the way that he did at the end of the game situation against the Clippers. Who was guarding him in the end of the game? It was Paul George, right? Paul George has a lot of length, athleticism. He's got a lot of quickness and agility to stay in front of Darius. And throughout the course of his career, he has been known as a pretty good individual defender. So if Donovan's on the court over the weekend against Los Angeles, Darius isn't matched up against Paul George in that situation. And then if the second scenario plays itself out and Donovan has the ball, he's initiating offense, and a defense decides we're going to send two at Donovan, then guess what? Darius Garland becomes one of the outlets, and all of a sudden the Cavs are playing in a 4-on-3 advantage situation. And Darius in that situation is a lot different than a Darius getting the two defenders sent at him because Donovan's not out there sharing the floor, taking pressure off of him, taking attention away from the defense. So the belief is when you get into a 7-game series in the playoffs, like, Donovan's not going to miss games anymore. He doesn't believe this knee injury is something that is going to get worse and worse and worse as the season goes on. The more he plays, he doesn't believe he's vulnerable to re-injuring it. So he's going to be out there in the fourth quarter. he's going to be sharing the court with all of these guys. And that, all of a sudden, makes things easier on Darius. Just like Darius being on the court with Donovan is going to theoretically make things easier on Donovan. So I just don't think we need to look at it similar to the situation that we saw over the weekend with the Clippers, because Donovan wasn't out there sharing the court with him. In the playoffs, both of them are going to be on the court together, and it's going to make the defense have trickier decisions and trickier matchup-related things than what has transpired at various points when Darius has failed as the late-game alpha in those situations. So I think that's important to note.
I'd love to give Darius the benefit of the doubt, and I understand that he's been put into opportunities now, more so, where he's had the opportunity to be in late-game situations. And I think that's the biggest thing. Has he been able to grow from being in those situations, and has J.B. Bickerstaff's choice to continue to leave him out there in late-game situations paid off? Because even when Donovan Mitchell was out there, and he drove in and had to get an offensive board and kicked it out to Darius Garland on February 12th against the Philadelphia 76ers, Darius Garland missed the wide-open three-pointer. And it's not the first time that it's happened over his career. Obviously, yes, it's different with having Donovan Mitchell on the court. You are absolutely correct. But I cannot say that Darius Garland is going to be better in the clutch simply because Donovan's on the court. I think it will help him, but I don't think that until we see him prove himself that we can do that. That's one of the reasons why I think that this is a note for how the Cavs need to improve. Darius Garland in the crunch time. Plain and simple, that's it. Like, if he can improve, if he can show that he's learned from the situations that he's been put in, if he can show that being alongside Donovan Mitchell and having those eyes taken off of him in the later games and coming away with key plays and not being able to turn over the ball when they need him to create and make buckets, then sure, I will go ahead and say that you are absolutely correct. But I think that Donovan obviously impacts the game in multiple ways and obviously takes eyes off of Darius Garland, but we've seen that it's also not been enough for Darius Garland to take that next step to be a clutch time player. And that's also because, more likely than not, if Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland are on the court at the same time in later minutes, the ball is going to be in Donovan Mitchell's hand no matter who's guarding him. So it just has to be a scenario thing. And we'll have to figure out, based on the scenarios that Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell are put in together, not only in the last three games of the season, but in the playoffs, if Darius Garland can meet the tab and can step up to the bill and be the player that the Cavs need him to be in clutch moments. Of players on the Cavs who average at least 3 minutes during clutch time, Garland has the lowest effective shooting percentage at 30.2%, and the second worst net rating at -10.8%. And the third worst turnover ratio at 13 flat. And to be fair, I know that's just the Cavs stuff, but looking at stats with him in the NBA, he also has the fifth worst pace among point guards in the NBA during clutch time, with an average of at least 3 minutes during clutch opportunities. I think that Darius Garland has been told to push the ball on multiple occasions by J.B. Bickerstaff. We talked about rounding third base and him going crazy, giving him the windmill sign to keep going. But I think when it comes to later games, Darius wants to create a later shot to slim the opportunities that the opposing team gets an opportunity at the basket again. And sometimes he waits too long. He not only does wait too long, but he gets into the shot clock and makes it harder for himself because the defense then is able to blitz and come at him and make it a more difficult shot rather than if he would attack the basket or attack to create earlier in the shot clock rather than waiting too long.
I also just think it's a tougher situation. Everything is more magnified. There's more pressure. There aren't as many lapses on the defensive end of the floor. So I think part of the reason why his pace slows down is because he's trying to figure out what the defense is going to do against him. And he's trying to figure out what the best plan is offensively. And I just don't think he's reading it as quick as maybe somebody else that has been in those situations more throughout the course of their career. I just don't think he has as much maturity, as much of an understanding of how to attack in those kinds of situations and how precious time is and how precious possession is and things along those lines. It is a bad habit of Darius's, and it's a bad habit of the Cavs in crunch time situations that it takes them so long to get into their offensive set. And by the time they try and run their offensive set and the defense takes away what it is they want to do, because a defense is designed to do that, especially in those situations, all of a sudden they have to go into their secondary actions and their third actions, and they have to just try and create something out of nothing. And oftentimes it feels like when the first play is taken away from Darius specifically, when the first trigger is taken away from the Cavs specifically, it just takes Darius a little bit longer to figure out what is the best counter to that. And then by the time he figures it out, by the time the Cavs figure it out, the shot clock is ticking down and they just have to create something out of nothing. So I think partially it's a Cavs issue, and I think partially it's a Darius issue for sure. And both have to be better in those kinds of situations.
Yeah, Chris, and the last one that I want to touch on, the last little portion that I think the Cavs need to improve on, especially going into the playoffs, is I'm starting to think that their selflessness is their Achilles heel. Because these guys are, all of them, selfless, not looking for themselves, trying to find the best play. And usually, on a team where there are multiple guys that are doing that, that is a successful recipe. But as of late, it's been harder for these guys to create shots and to find open looks. So for kicking around and finding assists and things of that nature, because those numbers haven't gone down, they've still gotten the assists that they've needed. The Cavs have the third best assist percentage and fourth best assist ratio in the NBA. So that's not the issue. It's more so taking the first shot if that is the best look. And I think the guy that has been starting to do that more, that I think the Cavs need to look to, is Max Strus. When it seems like the ball is swinging in his direction, it doesn't matter what the shot is looking like on the shot clock, the time is looking like on the shot clock, it looks like he looks at the basket beforehand, gets an idea of where he's at, understands where his defender is, and knows whether or not the ball is going up before he gets it in his hand. And when he puts it in his palms and he gets the ball, there is like no hesitation when it comes to him going to the basket or just getting up and taking a shot. And I think that's something that not only Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, but also other players on the Cavs need to do more of to get the best shot. Because the best shot could also be the first one. Not so much saying that like they won't find a good shot if they continue to pass the ball. But we've seen on multiple times that they've gotten to the latter half of a shot clock and not been able to create because everybody's still looking for the next best shot and there's like 5 seconds left. So that creates a harder shot, like a deep three, or like we saw against the Clippers, a turnaround falling into the bench shot by Max Strus when there was no time left. So I think selflessness is a great quality to have, but too much selflessness can be difficult to maneuver in a roster, especially with guys that are so limited shooters and limited to guys who can create for themselves and off the dribble especially.
Well, I also think that the lack of Donovan Mitchell being at his MVP level plays a big part in the shot quality for the Cavs. I think it plays a big part in the confidence that all of these guys play with. When they get an opportunity to play with Donovan, things are easier. Court is spread out. The quality of shot is better. The distance between the player and the defender on the shot is different as well. So I do think that the Cavs offense has suffered from that standpoint because so much of what they do, Ethan, is predicated on Donovan, Darius, Karras, one of those three, breaking down the defense, creating a driving kick, and oftentimes that's where the ball movement starts. Oftentimes that's where the away from the ball movement starts as well. And if you don't have Donovan collapsing the defense, if you don't have Donovan consistently getting into the teeth of the paint, then you know, it's going to change how defenses can guard the Cavs, and it's going to change how defenses can take some things away from the Cavs that they would otherwise want to do on the offensive end of the floor. And I just think that's part of it. And I think if these guys feel like they're getting more quality looks that are set up from their teammates, then I do think that they'll take those shots initially that are there rather than swinging it around and maybe winding down the shot clock and maybe being, quote unquote, too selfless.
Yeah, Chris, and I mean, I don't even want to harp on these guys too much because, like we've talked about, the camaraderie and the joy that they have, the trust that they have in one another is huge for them. And the selflessness, like I said, is a good quality to have. But sometimes too much of it can be a root of disaster. And, I mean, these guys are all hoopers at the NBA level. They know that they have the confidence in themselves to get buckets, but it seems like they are always looking for a better opportunity. And that's, again, not always a bad thing, but it just depends on the situation, depends on what each player is going through, the night that they're having, who's hot and who's not. And I think just knowing that there will be a guy on a nightly basis that just knows that the ball is going up. A great example of that was Sam Merrill. When Sam Merrill came onto the scene, when we were first getting to see him come onto the scene this year, it was like every time I saw him touch the ball, I would say, it's going up. Because that was more than likely his job. And even Sam nowadays has sometimes second-guessed himself or understands the difficulty of the shot that he's going to take and putting the ball on the floor. So yes, there are different scenarios where it's fine to not take the first shot, but I think Sam Merrill is a good example of somebody that when he was at his most successful this season, the ball was flying. He wasn't focused on missing one or two shots to begin the game, but as soon as one shot went in, we all knew that the magic was going to continue for Sam Merrill. And I think Max Strus is starting to do that more as well because we understand how high of an IQ Max Strus has and the ability that he has to know which plays are correct to make, but also understanding that there's a time and a place for a guy to just heat up and go. And we saw that in the Dallas Mavericks game. He had a heat check, and then he had an even bigger heat check to win the game against the Mavericks. So just being able to create for himself and just shoot, because as someone who was brought on the team to be a shooter, as somebody that was brought on the team to be something that the Cavs did not have in the first round of the playoffs last year that they thought cost them that series, is important to get back to the roots of that and just take the shots that are available to you rather than thinking too much because your IQ is so high. I think to myself, if I saw what they saw at the basket and I knew that I could shoot the ball at that level, the ball would always go up when it touched my hands. And that's, we make fun of him all the time, Michael Porter Jr., Michael No Swing Porter Jr., but the Denver Nuggets understand what they're going to get from him on a night-to-night basis. If he's open, he's going to shoot it. And he said even in like a podcast of his own, I believe, that sometimes he just simply doesn't see a defender because he's so locked in on the rim or the defender's just too small. And I think that's something that is a confidence thing, but it's also a reps thing that is good for everybody to have that's a shooter on the Cavs. And especially someone like Max Strus and Sam Merrill. Obviously, Sam's going to be out for a little bit, so we'll have to see how he comes back. But those different things are integral to the Cavs having success going into the playoffs.
Yeah, but there's also another thing, too. Defenses are able to guard Sam and Max in a different kind of way when Donovan's not out there. And defenses are more aware of Sam Merrill these days than they were at the beginning of the season. So the level of attention that he's getting and the way that they're guarding him and they're grabbing him and they're being physical with him and they're taking away his strong hand and all those different things have changed. So Sam also has to make the right basketball play, right? Just like Max Strus has to make the right basketball play. And everybody else on this team has to make the right basketball play. And if it's not there for Sam, because the defense has a job to do, and they're making it difficult on him to get a clean look at the basket, there's another way that he can impact the game. He can impact the game with his passing. He has done that at various points throughout the course of this season. And if he's going to attract two or if he's going to have people so close to him when it comes to, you know, him coming off of screens or him getting catch and shoot opportunities. If guys are going to be that close to him and they're going to guard him as tight as they have at various points, that means somebody else is going to be open. And he does need to make the right basketball play. Yeah, it's great that he has no conscience. And it's great that he comes off the bench and he's willing to fire. I don't think that's ever going to go away for him. I don't think it ever should go away from him. But he has to balance that mentality with trying to do the right thing for this offense. And it's not always the right thing for Sam Merrill to take threes. And it's not always the right thing for Max Strus to take threes either. And I think that's an important distinction. And it's one thing if you're Michael Porter Jr. and you're 6'11" or something like that, you can shoot over anybody. And it's a lot easier to say, well, I don't even see the defender because he's so high up in the air. But Max Strus is 6'5" and Sam Merrill's 6'5". So these guys shooting over 6'8" guys, or these guys creating space against some of the longer, more athletic wings that are being used against them because of how dangerous they are and how important they are to the Cavs offense, it's not always the easiest thing for them to get shots off the way that it is for some of the other guys that you mentioned. So I do think we have to point that out too.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I don't think I knew the height discrepancy was 6 inches between Michael Porter Jr. and Max Strus, but
it is. It's like 5 or 6 inches.
That's a big discrepancy. But like I said, I definitely understand, like, Sam Merrill, as of recently, being able to make the decision whether he has an open shot or if it's a tough shot because he's being guarded so heavily. And like we said on multiple times during this podcast, Sam Merrill's gravity that he brings to the game, the amount of eyes that he's now controlling, is also just a big thing. And I think Max Strus can get to that level too if he doesn't already. And I think the difference between Max Strus and Sam Merrill is Max Strus has more of an interior game because he's a little bit bigger, he's a little bit stronger, he can get into the interior. I don't know who I would say has a better handle, Sam Merrill or Max Strus, but I think that Max has the ability to get inside more, and I think that hesitation is also helpful for him because obviously you don't want to give it away too much. But the player that I think really does that kind of well, but I would want to see more confidence from on just plain shooting the ball, and we've seen that grow this season, is Isaac Okoro. Like, Isaac has, like we've talked about earlier this season, he's gone from catching the ball and immediately going into a jab step before driving to the basket after the defender jumps up to looking at the basket and deciding if he wants to dribble or drive or if he wants to take the shot, to now he's immediately looking at the basket and going up if he already knows where the defender is, or if he knows where the defender is and he's going to come in quickly, he dribble drives past them and goes to the basket. And we know that Isaac Okoro can finish at the rim. That's something that we like to see in transition. He hits his little Euro step and gets into the paint. He has good size, athleticism, strength. That's three different people we just mentioned that have the ability to dribble drive, to make defenders make decisions. And George Niang has even gotten better at that, at making defenders decide whether they want to crash out on him or allow him to get to the basket, because he's shown that at times he can create at the rim as well, even if it looks a little funkier than the rest.
Yeah, he'll put it on the deck. He'll use his little spin move. He'll use his girth and his strength to finish over some of these guys. He's got a better float game than I thought he was going to have. He's been better finishing at the rim than I thought as well. And he's going to have to do that kind of stuff, just like Isaac's going to have to do that kind of stuff to keep the defense honest.
And I think there's a lot of other things that the Cavs could do better. Do you have anything in mind that you want to touch on before we wrap up today's podcast?
No, not really. I think their struggles are pretty straightforward. I also think that a majority of this is taken care of if Donovan can be healthy and effective and be back to MVP candidate Donovan Mitchell. If he doesn't get back to that, yeah, I think all these things would help. Sure, play faster, make more threes, maybe split up Jared and Evan. But if Donovan Mitchell isn't the Cavs' trump card that he was at the beginning of the season, then I think they're fighting an uphill battle to win a first-round playoff series against anyone in the Eastern Conference at this point. Even in the matchups that I would deem, you would deem, the Cavs would deem, and fans would deem a little bit more favorable. There's just enough evidence that points to they are not the same team when Donovan Mitchell is not playing at the highest level possible.
I agree. I mean, this team goes as Donovan Mitchell goes, and we've talked about the different scenarios a lot tonight about how he impacts the different aspects of the Cavs game, and we'll just have to see what kind of Donovan Mitchell the Cavs get and what the Cavs surrounding players are able to do with that and with what they don't have. But I think that's a great spot to end today's podcast. So until next time, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But remember to become a Cavs insider and interact with Chris and me by subscribing to Subtext. Sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.